Welcome back, amigo. A couple of interesting holidays to celebrate over here. It's Take Your Dog to Work Day and Ugliest Dog Day. Now, Chester ain't a dog exactly, but he does like to bother me at work, and he is ugly as hell. So it does feel kind of fitting. Don't you think so, Chester? Hey, you're not a bad-looking gator, I guess. You all kind of look the same to me. Anyways, come on inside, amigo. A holiday's a holiday. All right, that's better. Hey, something I meant to tell you. Whatever you do, do not visit simplyscarypodcast.com and sign up as a patron. It's way too inexpensive to join, and you get way too much great content to enjoy. I'm just a little worried you'll have too much fun is all. Also, don't even think about joining my Patreon at patreon.com/DrewBlood too. I'd be way too happy if you did that. And since this is a horror show, I try to stay as dark and morose as possible. All right, amigos, it's that time to smoke 'em if you got 'em and drink those glasses to the bottom, because your old pal Drew Blood has a tale to tell. And tonight, we're joined by Thomas O, by way of our pals at Velox Books. This one is from Thomas's latest release with Velox, entitled Three Truths and Other Unsettling Tales. So without further delay, from author Thomas O, I give you The Grim Melody. Brady Hollis fell 47 floors and lived. Even after hitting the ground, he was still conscious. He was aware of the screams and the panic that surrounded him, and he felt a tinge of relief when the ambulance and fire truck arrived. There was no pain when the responders carefully placed him on a backboard and finally got him into the ambulance.
Inbound with a male construction worker, 27 years.
The paramedic said into his radio as he called ahead to the hospital. He looked Brady up and down.
Possible blunt force trauma. Pulse 60, blood pressure 120 over 80.
The driver raised his eyes and shot a look through the rearview mirror.
Double check that. There's no way his vitals are that normal.
I already did,
the tendon paramedic shot back. Their trip was short. St. Augustus Hospital was only a few blocks away, and the midday traffic was light. As they pulled up outside the ER, the ambulance doors were flung open, and Brady, still alert, was greeted by a team of medical professionals who tended to him immediately.
He fell from the top of that huge tower they're building,
the paramedic reported. The doctor flashed a light into Brady's eye.
How is he still in one piece?
Both paramedics looked at each other and shrugged as Brady was wheeled into the emergency room.
I don't know. When we got there, he was on the street. Witnesses said he hit the asphalt head on.
Wow. Well, let's take a look at him,
the doctor said as he followed the gurney inside. The stunned doctors kept him overnight for observation, but aside from some bruising and abrasions, they found nothing wrong with him. His construction buddies visited, more than could fit in the room, and eventually they had to be shooed out by Carla, Brady's nurse for the night.
He needs some room to breathe, gentlemen,
she said as she worked her way past the broad-shouldered men. The men said their goodbyes with a procession of handshakes, fist bumps, and solid pats on the shoulder. Soon the room quieted down and Carla was alone with Brady. She went through her spiel, call button on the side of the bed, pitcher of water on the table, TV remote next to the bed rail. But halfway through, she stopped her automated speech and looked at him in awe.
I'm sorry, but did you really fall from the top of that building? It's just so hard to believe.
Yeah, I was guiding the beam into place.
Brady closed his eyes as he tried to recall.
I unhooked my lanyard just for a moment. I was trying to step around the support column. And then, I'm not sure what happened. Somehow I slipped.
Incredible,
Carla said.
just incredible. You must be made of titanium.
Brady only smiled in response. With that, Carla encouraged her patient to get some sleep and made her way from the room. Soon the activity in the hospital died down, and only the murmuring of the nurses and the occasional beeping of a machine could be heard in the rooms. Brady began to rest. His eyes had been closed for no more than 5 minutes when a gruff voice, speaking too softly to be understood, sounded out from within his room. Brady shot up and looked around.
"Who's there?"
he questioned into the darkness. Before he could reach for the dimmer to turn the lights up, a small childlike form quickly jumped onto his bed. Brady was immobilized. Whether it was from fear or from an unseen force, he didn't know. He could sense the intruder staring at his face.
What's going on?
He asked with a shaky voice. The intruder sat atop Brady's chest, his finger poking Brady's forehead.
You've been given life,
the gruff, gravelly voice said.
Go live it. Be happy. Be sad.
With that, the small form jumped from the bed and scuttled out of the room. Brady, finding his freedom of movement restored, hit the call button.
Nurse station, can I help you?
There was someone, something in my room.
Brady's voice was shaken from the experience.
I'll have Carla check in on you. Give me just a minute.
Brady actually waited less than a minute before Carla came through his door. She scanned the room for any sign of an unwelcome guest.
Was there someone in here with you?
Brady pondered on what had just happened.
Yeah, a little man maybe.
All he'd seen was a small silhouette.
Actually, I don't know what it was. It was the size of a kid, but it moved way too fast, and really, I just don't know.
Carla looked him over and studied his breathing pattern.
You suffered quite a trauma today. I'll call the doctor and maybe he'll let me give you something to help you sleep.
Brady shook his head.
No, it's okay. Whatever it was, it's gone now.
The brunette nurse looked around.
Yeah, we're alone. But I have to tell you, I was just down the hall, and I didn't see anyone come out of your room.
I understand,
Brady said, still a little shaky.
Maybe I just imagined it.
Carla studied her patient, and even though his blood pressure and heart rate were normal on the monitors, he appeared sweaty and disheveled. She reached for his pillow and fluffed it up.
Well, you're never going to get to sleep if we can't calm you down,
she said as she replaced the pillow.
I'll be fine.
Of course you'll be fine,
she replied with a smile.
You have me for your nurse. Would some soft music help you relax?
Sure. Maybe something classical.
Perfect,
she said as she fiddled with the TV remote.
There's a channel on here that plays nothing but classical.
Brady listened as the pleasant notes filled the room.
Thank you,
he said, beginning to relax.
Almost as good as playing it myself.
Oh, you play?
Yes, piano. Mostly when I'm stressed.
Carla glanced at the construction worker's beefy fingers and imagined them working their way across a set of piano keys. Brady noticed her expression.
Silly, I know.
Not silly at all. I wish we had one here for you to play. But since we don't, just try your best to relax.
Brady looked into her pretty brown eyes.
I think I'll be okay. I feel better already.
She smiled at him and pointed to the call button.
I'm here until 7 a.m. Let me know if you need anything.
He couldn't help but smile as she sauntered away. From that point on, Brady Hollis lived a charmed life. His construction firm paid out a large settlement rather than risk going to court over the accident. The strange thing was, Brady never even threatened to sue them. As he saw it, he was the one at fault. He knew better than to remove his lanyard. But the lawyers, being lawyers, wanted to make sure the company had no further liabilities, and they insisted he take the money. He left the construction industry and found work as an assistant to a veterinarian. He made far less money, but with his settlement, that wasn't really a concern. Working for the vet was a far more rewarding experience than guiding girders in the place. And for whatever reason, he kept running into Carla. First, he saw her at the supermarket where they said an awkward hello. A few weeks later, she brought her chocolate lab to the vet for a checkup and was surprised to find Brady working there. He saw her again at the car wash, a concert, and the dentist. He finally took it as a sign from above and asked her out on a date. She accepted. The date went well, as did every date after that. They married after 6 months. Brady didn't think he could be any happier until the birth of his daughter. Brady lived a charmed life indeed, and just when everything was perfect, that's when he saw the little man again. Lying in bed half asleep, Brady watched the light from the television flicker through the bedroom. Carla slept peacefully next to him. On his nightstand, a baby monitor played the sounds from the nursery where Charlotte, his 9-month-old daughter, slept. His eyes closed, sleep almost taking hold for the night. A gruff voice came through the monitor speaking some sort of foreign language. Brady shot up and looked at the device on the nightstand. Again, the rough-edged voice came through, almost beckoning him to the room. In only seconds, Brady darted from the bed and down the hallway. As he flung the door to the nursery open, a horrific sight greeted him. His daughter was in the arms of what could best be described as a half-sized adult. Tufts of gray hair poked out from underneath a bowler hat. His cracked, weathered skin was stretched tautly across his face. A dark, dusty suit covered his body. In his hand was a large knife.
"Get the hell away from her!"
Brady screamed as he moved into the room.
"Carla!"
he shouted behind him.
"Call 911!
The little man hissed at Brady as he moved the knife up to the throat of the little baby. Brady stopped dead. His daughter, who looked to be yet unharmed, surveyed the room curiously, seemingly unaware of the danger she was in. Neither man moved as the lights from the mobile zipped across the room.
"Just put her down, please," Brady said. He could barely hear himself over the beating of his heart.
The little man smiled, and Brady could swear dust spewed out from the cracks on the man's lips. With no warning, the little man jumped across the room in a single leap with the baby still cradled in his arms. He hopped up to the windowsill and kicked the glass out. The whole thing happened before Brady could even react, and he watched in horror as the little man leapt through the shattered opening. Carla came screaming down the hall holding her cell phone.
"What's happened?"
she demanded.
"Did you call 911?
Brady yelled over his shoulder as he ran to the window.
"Yes, what's going on?"
"Stay here,"
he ordered as he jumped out the second floor window. He landed on an awning and then rolled off to the ground below. Despite some scrapes and scratches, he was unhurt. He had no idea where the little man had run off to and resorted to screaming the name of his daughter as if she could answer. Lights in the neighbors' houses came on. From far away, he could hear the sound of police sirens. He picked a direction and ran, hoping he was headed the right way. As he got to the end of the street, he heard the loud cry of his daughter break through the night air.
"Alive!"
He ran toward the crying and found her pushed under a juniper bush. He carefully picked her up and to his great relief found no injuries. The little man was gone. He arrived back at the house at the same time the police arrived. With tears in his eyes, he handed her to Carla, then fell to the ground, shaken. The next few hours blurred into each other. Carla took the baby along with a police escort to get checked out at the hospital. Brady stayed behind and gave his witness statement to a million different officers, As the police were finishing up, he got a text from Carla. Charlotte okay, no injuries, almost done, be home soon, love you. He thanked the officers for their help and for agreeing to keep a unit parked out on the street until morning. He retreated inside and waited. When the house became too quiet for him, he went to the closet and did something he hadn't done in a couple of years. He retrieved the keyboard piano, laid it across the bed, and plugged it in. It was a nice model, a fancy one that Carla had bought for him right after they were married. He had only touched it a few times, but at that moment, he needed its calming power more than ever. For Brady, it was like the return of an old friend, and he kept playing right up until the moment when Carla returned. She entered with Charlotte, and he held them both. They laid Charlotte down on their bed where she slept peacefully. Carla glanced at the keyboard.
"I thought you forgot about that thing,"
she said in a low voice. Brady shook his head. "Of course not."
"Play something relaxing."
Brady lowered the volume as to not wake Charlotte, then began moving his fingers from key to key. Carla closed her eyes and listened.
"What's it called?"
she asked as the notes floated through her mind. "It's a sonata."
"Yeah, but what's its name?"
"I haven't given it a name yet." Brady kept playing the soothing melody.
"You wrote this?"
"A long time ago, yes. It's actually unfinished." Carla kept listening.
"It sounds finished to me."
"This is just the first movement. It still needs two more."
"Well, it's beautiful already."
Carla snuggled up to Charlotte at the top of the bed and closed her eyes.
"Keep playing,"
she requested. Brady did as he was asked. Even after Carla fell asleep, he kept going, and he managed to come up with the backbone for the second movement of his sonata by the morning. The next day, they installed a top-of-the-line security system, cameras, sensors, alarms, live monitoring, everything that the security company offered. They had new doors and windows installed, too. Their house became a fortress, and Brady and Carla felt safe. For the next 5 years, Brady had no worries. The little man faded from his daily thoughts, but not from his memories. In the meantime, they had a son who they named Carl. He had Brady's eyes and his laid-back nature. Brady was fiercely devoted to his family and lived to make sure they had everything they needed. On a mundane day, Carla decided to take the children and visit her mother. Brady, who had plenty of yard work to keep him occupied, decided to stay home. He helped her load the children into their car seats and kissed them all goodbye. He watched as the minivan backed out of the driveway and moved slowly down the street. As he waved goodbye, a movement in the vehicle's cargo area caught his attention. He squinted to get a better look and saw waving at him the little man. His face was pressed right up against the window. Brady took off after the van but couldn't keep up. He waved his arms frantically to flag down Carla, but neither she nor the children seemed to notice. As they turned a corner, Brady could see the little man waving and smiling. He stuck his tongue out at Brady and licked the window. Fumbling through his pockets, Brady searched desperately for his cell phone. His first call was to Carla, but it went straight to her voicemail. He called 911 next and screamed at the operator for help. The police responded quickly and arrived to find Brady furiously pounding his fingers on the cell phone screen, trying to get a call through to his wife. Hours went by with no sign of his family. As had happened years earlier, he answered a million questions from the officers. One of them gave him a look of pity, while others stared at him suspiciously. A day went by, a whole damn day, without Brady hearing from his family. The police were looking for them, he was assured, though it was clear they seemed to think it was a domestic squabble playing out rather than some sort of crime. Brady's description of the little man hiding in the back of the van didn't seem to hold much weight. He himself had spent the night combing the city, checking every possible route between his house and his mother-in-law's. Family members and friends joined in too, though nobody could seem to find them. The next afternoon, he got a call from a neighbor who was among the searchers looking for his family.
"Hello?"
Brady said anxiously into his phone.
"Hey, Brady, it's William. I think I found your van."
"Where? Where is it?"
Brady shot up from his seat.
"I was passing over Cooper's Bridge and I saw it off the road, down by the river. I'm pretty sure it's yours."
"Are they there?"
Brady grabbed his keys and ran to his car.
"I'm headed down there right now."
He could hear William panting as he climbed his way from the road down the embankment.
"Yeah, it's definitely your van. Give me just a minute. It's still far away."
Brady stopped short of his car, his keys still in his hand. He waited, still as a statue. He could hear the gravel crunch under William's steps as he made his way nearer to the car. Then there was a moment of silence.
"William!"
Brady shouted.
"What do you see?"
It seemed like William didn't want to speak.
"What do you see?"
"They're in there. All three of them."
Brady breathed out a short breath.
"The door is locked. They're not moving."
Through the phone, he could hear William rapping his fist against the window of the minivan.
"Carla, are you okay?"
Just silence. Then again.
"Carla, can you hear me?"
The phone dropped from Brady's hand and clattered to the driveway. But he could still hear William's desperate voice.
"Carla! Carla!"
Having reached his darkest moment, Brady melted to the ground. Lying on his back, he stared straight into the cloudless blue sky.
"Kill me,"
he said. There was an abrupt change in the pitch of William's voice.
"Carla, are you okay?"
Brady lifted his head up. The faint, muffled sound of a female voice could be heard in response. Then William spoke again.
"Brady, I think she's okay. Carla, open the door."
Brady sat up and grabbed the phone, putting it next to his ear. He could hear the unmistakable sound of the car door clicking open, and then the sound of two children as they began crying. They were alive, all of them. He looked to the sky.
"Thank you," he whispered.
That night, after endless rounds of police questioning, Brady found himself unable to sleep. Carla and the children, who had no recollection of what had happened, dozed peacefully. He went to the closet where his dusty keyboard sat and retrieved it with jittery hands. As soon as it was within his grasp, he felt reassured, as if everything was instantly better. He played. Brady and Carla's first grandchild was beautiful. She had a shockingly full head of hair and the cutest button nose that he had ever seen. She seemed to most resemble her mother, Charlotte. Brady, who had spent 30 rewarding years working at the same veterinary clinic, found himself with plenty of extra time when he retired. He was able to offer Charlotte one of the most valuable gifts a new parent can receive, free babysitting. It was with that offer that he found himself at his daughter's house 2 days a week, babysitting the granddaughter he was so proud of. As the little one approached 8 months, she began scooting around on the floor like a little army ranger. Brady followed her around the home, smiling at her delightful little movements as she made her way across the living room. Brady tilted his head at the sound that had come from upstairs. He was sure nobody else was in the home. Probably nothing, he thought, as he resumed following the baby. That one was louder. After a moment's pause, he scooped up the baby and went up the stairs to investigate. It was coming from the nursery. He pushed the door open and looked inside. The baby cooed in his hands as he took a sweeping look around the quiet room. Just as he was about to turn and leave, he noticed some movement in the crib. Whatever it was covered by a blanket, and it had just rolled over. Brady stepped closer to the crib with his free arm outstretched. He wondered if Charlotte had gotten a cat and had not mentioned it to him. He reached into the crib hesitantly, as if he knew something was really wrong. He moved the blanket aside and saw, sleeping peacefully in the crib, the same granddaughter that he believed he was already holding. His gaze shot over to the little body in the crook of his arm. It was much bigger than the baby he had been holding just a few moments earlier, more like the size of a small child, and it was dressed in a dusty gray suit. Brady dropped the gray bundle to the floor and watched in revulsion as it rolled over and scuttled out of the nursery.
"What are you?"
Brady shouted out to the hallway. He looked behind him to make sure his granddaughter was okay in the crib, but it was empty. In a panic, Brady looked all around the room for his granddaughter. It was a pointless search that yielded only further dread when he couldn't find her anywhere. He ran out of the bedroom and down the hallway. Hearing a commotion from the kitchen, he descended the stairway 3 steps at a time and ran to the source of the noise. He immediately saw that the oven was on, though it had been off earlier. He jumped across the room in one bound and nearly took the oven door off in his haste to open it. Inside, his little baby granddaughter turned her head and looked at him, unharmed in the still cool oven. He pulled her out and held her closely. After checking the baby to make sure she was unharmed, he debated whether or not he should call the police, but he intrinsically knew that the little man wouldn't be found and that his story would make no sense to anyone. Instead, he walked carefully to the couch and comforted her. He wheeled his arms to stop trembling, though he knew there was only one thing that would truly calm him. His fingers twitched in anticipation of going home and playing his keyboard. Brady was in his hospital bed, staring up at the ceiling. Around him, machines beeped and whirred. And even though he could no longer communicate, he was aware of what was going on around him.
"He could go at any time," the doctor advised his family. "Stay nearby."
Everyone was there, everyone he loved anyway. Next to him sat his granddaughter, the same one who had been saved from the oven 25 years earlier. She held onto his hand tenderly. The rest of his family, through their teary eyes, assured one another that he had lived a great life and that he was moving on to his next great adventure, whatever that might be. Brady smiled inwardly and agreed with them. "Don't be sad for me. I wouldn't change a damn thing," he thought. The machine beeped. No, not a damn thing. The machine stopped beating. Brady smiled as his lungs expelled their last bit of air. Then, the oddest thing of all happened to him. He didn't die. He was still lying in his bed, fully aware of his surroundings, as the doctor came and listened for his heartbeat.
"He's passed," the doctor said solemnly.
But that's not true, Brady thought as he witnessed his family comfort one another. His eyes darted around the room in confusion. "I'm still here." His body remained breathless. A movement in the corner of the room caught his eye, and there he saw the little man, standing with his arms folded across his chest. Despite the fact that they had had several close encounters over his lifetime, Brady had never gotten the chance to really stare at him. And now that he could see him clearly, he thought that the little man looked like a breathing corpse.
The color left Brady's vision, like a television flickering into black and white. His family became as still as statues, and there was no more sobbing, no more comforting. He observed the little man walk from the room. Cautiously, Brady sat up.
Carla,
he said to his wife. She remained motionless. He pulled the medical devices and monitors from his body and stepped down from the bed. From outside of his hospital room, he could hear croaky mutterings, almost sounding like an invitation to follow. He took an uncertain step toward the door and found that he could walk without difficulty. He took one last look back at his family and then left the room. The hospital was abandoned. Its silent hallways seemed to pulse with gray light that bathed the dingy walls. Around the corner is where he found the little man, standing in the middle of the corridor. Oddly, Brady felt no fear of the menacing person who had popped up throughout his life.
"Who are you?"
he asked.
"Hollins,"
the little man answered.
"Am I dead?" "Still alive,"
the little man responded.
"Still fallen."
"Still fallen? From where?"
"From the building."
Brady shook his head.
"That's not possible. That was over 60 years ago." "No, only 2 seconds.
The weight of the little man's words pulled Brady to the floor, where he sat on the cold towel.
"I'm imagining all of this. This is all in my mind. Nearly a whole life compressed by me. Carla, the kids, they were never real?"
With a furrowed brow, the little man thought through his response.
"In a billion years, the world will be a barren rock. Who will be left to say what was genuine and what wasn't?"
Brady shook his head.
"I don't know."
Suddenly, Brady was no longer standing in the hallway, but a large room that was so dimly lit that he couldn't see the walls. A spotlight lit up a corner, and Brady saw a piano illuminated in the circle of light.
"Almost done. Finish your sonata,"
the little man croaked.
"That's what this is all about? A song?" "Yes."
Brady stood up and walked over to the piano. He looked down at his fingers, which were no longer gnarled with age, but resembled the vigorous hands of his construction worker days. Anticipating, waiting, the little man watched eagerly.
"I heard you play the first movement yesterday. Most beautiful song. When I realized you were going to die, I wanted to give you a chance to finish. But you terrorized me. When did you write? Only when you were scared or upset. I had to encourage you from time to time."
Brady thought back to all the times when Hollins had terrorized him. It was after Charlotte had been kidnapped that he worked on his second movement, and when Carla and the kids disappeared for a day. After he got them back, he spent the next 2 sleepless nights composing most of the third movement. He slowly began to understand what the little man was telling him. After the incident with his granddaughter in the oven, he nearly finished the song, going back and filling in all the blank spaces he had left behind. The song, his song, played in his head and swirled around in his memory. He recalled all the times when he felt distressed or sad, and he realized that he had sought refuge in composing during those times.
"You gave me a whole lifetime to write a song,"
Brady said, speaking to himself as much as he was to the little man.
"Yes, Without a lifetime of experience behind you, your sonata would be a lie.
He then pointed to the piano.
Honor your family by finishing.
Moving with the grace and confidence that his body hadn't felt in ages, the now youthful Brady pulled up the bench and sat down. Did he feel anger, sadness, love? He wasn't even sure. He wiggled his fingers before placing them upon the keys. The sonata only needed a few finishing touches. Mostly, he had to pin down a few chords in the last movement. Time stopped as Brady, who seemed to be immune from fatigue and hunger, ironed out every last detail of his masterpiece in the following hours. Or possibly days.
Done!
Brady shouted when every last note had found its home. He looked around, but the little man was nowhere to be found. Behind him, a large door loomed. Fog rolled along the floor, eerily illuminated by a light seeping in from under the threshold. He stood up and approached the door. A full-length mirror greeted him, which allowed him the opportunity to adjust the bow tie of the tuxedo he was all of a sudden wearing. He smiled at the reflection of his 27-year-old self. When he was ready, the door opened to reveal the stage of an expansive concert hall, its seats filled with eager concertgoers. Their low murmur settled into complete silence as Brady stepped into the hall. A large grand piano sat center stage. Upon surveying the crowd, Brady spotted Carla at the center of the hall. She appeared as she did when they first met. She was flanked by their children and grandchildren. Behind her sat the little man with a large, excited smile upon his face. He made a motion with his hand, encouraging Brady to step to the piano. Brady did as he was told and sat down while 1,000 patrons watched in anticipation. He placed his fingers on the keys. He played his life. As the final notes faded out, the crowd gave an uproarious response. A 2-minute standing ovation that made the walls shake. Tears formed in the eyes of Hollins. He made a bowing motion to Brady, which cued Brady himself to take a long bow. His children looked at him adoringly. He could see Carla mouthing, "I love you." Brady took it all in, right up until the moment when the sound of the crowd faded and was replaced by the sound of a woman screaming on the sidewalk below him. Brady Hollis fell 47 floors and died. That was The Grim Melody by author Thomas O. A good reminder how that unfinished project of yours might just be keeping you going. Also, it's a good refresher on workplace safety. A little about the author. Thomas O. likes dogs, the ocean, and creepy stories. He's the author of 3 books on Amazon, published by Velox Books, The Seer of Possibilities, Face Down in the Grave, and 3 Truths, in which this story is included. Thanks, Thomas. And a friendly reminder to check out our pals from Velox on VeloxBooks.com. They specialize in the stuff you come here for. Indie-style horror stories with that tangy creepypasta flavor you love. Be sure to check them out for your next read.
And do old Drew Blood a favor, would you? Subscribe to his podcast wherever you do your listening and leave him a 5-star review and a kind word, even if you're listening on YouTube. He needs soldiers on all fronts to win this battle, and he appreciates it. To hear a premium ad-free edition of tonight's and all the other episodes, visit SimplyScaryPodcast.com today and click Patrons in the upper menu. You'll find yourself at ChillingTalesForDarkNights.com, where you can become a patron for as little as $5 per month and get access to their entire audio archive, all ad-free and available to download or stream. Thank you for your time and for supporting our sponsors. When you support our sponsors, you support this show. If you happen to use Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or YouTube, you can follow and subscribe to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights there, where you'll get all the latest updates and new releases and have the chance to interact with them each and every week. Oh, and you can find Drew Blood on Facebook and Instagram, and sometimes Twitter. The Drew Blood's Dark Tales podcast is accepting submissions, friend. If you've got a story or two you'd like to be featured on the show, send it to drewbloodhorror@gmail.com. If selected, you'll get the full treatment, 10 bananas.
Well, I'm afraid this is where we part ways, at least till next week. So grab a drink for the road, amigo. I left one out by the mailbox for you, so you can, you know, shake a leg. May the wind be at your back, and may the road rise up to meet you, and may you never scald your lips on another man's porridge. Yes, that's an actual proverb. Good one for Pride Month, too. Fucking Jeff. Shit. Anyway, go fuck yourself. Good night, y'all.